The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, Dan Gable Museum, joined by the birthday boy himself, Andy Hamilton, turns 43 the day we're recording this podcast. This doesn't happen very often because we record on Tuesday, Wednesday, and if it was on a Saturday, we probably wouldn't record just to hit your birthday, but it worked out today that it was 43 right on the button. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Kyle.
It's going to be your birthday show.
Awesome. Absolutely. What does my birthday show entail?
It's going to be asking you questions about what's transpired up to this point. I think it'll be fascinating because this has been a fascinating journey. We got to get to our mailbag real quick, but it's going to be fun having a chance to reminisce with you about the show. We're probably going to actually talk about how this show in its current form, I don't think we've talked about the story about how we have this podcast in its current form. I don't think we've ever told that story. So I think we're going to do it today.
Sounds good. Go for it.
Aaron Swayze, we're going to get to that real quick. Aaron Swayze sent another email. This is our mailbag. He found us the coach. Jay Snow is the only head wrestling coach in the state of Mississippi, and we're going to get him on the show after the NCAA championships. Had a chance to talk to him for a couple minutes. Completely fascinated with what he will have to say about wrestling in Mississippi.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a chance to talk to Jay Snow about his journey and what that entails. So thank you to Aaron for being a consistent mailbag contributor. And if you want to give us your take on any number of topics, we encourage you to do that at Wrestling Museum, at Track Wrestling, at Andy_Hamilton. You can go to the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum. You can go to trackwrestling.com. Numerous ways to get in touch with us, but we want to hear from you about what you think about the sport. We got to touch quickly on Iowa against Oklahoma State because that was such a big dual meet. I was down there for that. What an atmosphere that was. Craziness ensued. Didn't expect a lot of what happened, but what a great product. Over 13,000 fans, a storied program with 34 national championships. I'm sure you were checked into that dual meet. It was a lot of fun to see how that transpired. Good meet.
What was the environment like?
Absolute pandemonium. The arena, if anyone's been there, it's completely straight up. It's almost like you're right on top of the mat. Even the highest seat in the arena is almost like it's on the mat. They have stands around the mat. You're just spot on close to it. They had an elevated stage for this particular meet. And those fans wanted blood. They were up for grabs. Yeah, they were hostile. They were into it, and they wanted that win, and I don't think they were going to leave that place without it. You just had the vibe that Oklahoma State was going to win that dual meet when you walk in the arena. It just felt like they wanted this to happen. John Smith was into it. The crowd was into it. They had just a great turnout. Couldn't ask for a better event for the sport.
Saw a picture you took of John Smith with some Gable beer. What did he think of the Gable beer?
He didn't drink any when I gave it to him, but he was excited to get it.
Okay.
And I think that once we've heard, we asked John Smith on last show about what he thought of Gable, and I appreciated his comments. He said Gable made it hard on him, and I thought that was telling. That's a great compliment that it's hard to win when Gable's the guy that you're going after. But John Smith, he just keeps getting better all the time. I don't want to see him retire from coaching. I hope he has another 10 years. I remember in 05, he said, I'm on the backside of his career, and here we are in 2019. I think he's got 10 more years in him. He keeps getting better. I like his attitude. He's so good for the sport, and he can zero in on his message. I'm sure you noticed that, too. He can articulate what he thinks very well, and so John Smith, a great asset for the sport. And he got excited a couple times there, too.
I think we'd still be interviewing him if he didn't have other priorities.
Dude, you're right after that, though, man. I have so many regrets on questions that did not get asked. And I felt the same way with Tom Brands. Just you get done, you're shaking your head like, we forgot to ask that. We forgot to ask that. And we still went 50 minutes with each of those guys, and we still have questions that were left on the table. So more reason to get those guys back on the program. Today we have Kevin Jackson. He's the developmental coach for USA Wrestling. He is the day-to-day coach for Jaden Cox, who won a world championship in 2018, has some young guys in the program. You told me about Aaron Brooks. You saw something special in him when you showed me the video on Track Wrestling and said, you got to watch this guy. I saw a guy that had everything when you talk about wrestling. You say, if only that guy could pull the trigger and do these things, he could be so great. He does them all. He's got the intensity. He's got the skills. And I see nothing but upside for Aaron Brooks. He's going to be a fun guy to watch in college. And I just hope he has a long and successful career, because he can be the next Jordan Burroughs for the United States. I think he has that draw.
Yeah, he's got a lot of upside. Absolutely, a ton of upside. And I think back to that match in the opening round at Cadet Worlds in 2017 where he wrestled a Georgian. And I have never seen somebody break somebody in a minute and a half. But I've... Until that moment, I mean, he was like fake shot, circle, circle, circle. And that, like, the Georgian was like spinning circles in the center circle, and he was getting worn out just doing that as Aaron was dodging and faking. And only 2 points the Georgian scored in that match. I think the score was like 14-2. And the only 2 points that the Georgian scored were an exposure that points should have been to Aaron on like one of those Jonesy tilts where the referees hadn't seen it. The officials hadn't seen it as much. Later in the tournament, he got that call because they were a little bit more aware of who was responsible for initiating the exposure. So yeah, he's a dynamite talent, and there's a ton of upside with Aaron Brooks.
Of course, this is Andy Hamilton's birthday show, 43 years on planet Earth. Let's talk about your journey in wrestling. One of the things I go back to was you told me when I asked you this question a few years ago, I said, who was the guy that was your favorite guy to interview? And your answer was, if you remember right.
A few years ago?
Yeah. You said the best guy, the guy that gives you the most.
You're probably talking about Mark Perry.
I am talking about Mark Perry.
Okay.
And I was floored by that. I said, Mark Perry. I said, you got to be kidding me. Because I only saw the guy that was faking injury times on the mat. And I just saw this guy. I was like, how could this guy give you the most insight? And so it opened my mind. And then all of a sudden I started talking to him. I'm like, Andy's right. This guy is a wealth of knowledge. And the thing I like about him is that we can be honest about that. He'll tell you, I was faking injury timeouts, I wasn't healthy, and he'll be completely candid about the good and bad of his career. Let's go through that. What was it like talking to Mark Perry, having him when you were at the Iowa City Press Citizen for 5 years?
Well, I remember the first time that he came in for his recruiting visit. His senior year at Blair Academy, he came in for his recruiting visit. I kind of, in the back of my head, thought Iowa was wasting their time recruiting John Smith's nephew. And I heard through kind of some back channels, like, no, this guy's interested in maybe going somewhere else. And he came in on a football weekend. They had wrestle offs that weekend. I interviewed him and I was like, wow, I've never interviewed a 17, 18 year old kid who gave me that much insight. And the quotes were colorful. Certainly a unbelievable wrestling mind growing up in the Smith family down in Stillwater. And, you know, his dad, Mark Sr., was a longtime D1 assistant. And obviously his Uncle Pat, four-time NCAA champ, Uncle John, talked about him already. And so, you know, you grow up in that environment, you're going to know wrestling inside and out. And he certainly does. And the way that he can convey what he knows, it's in such a colorful manner, really interesting.
What would you say if you've interviewed 1,000 people in your life?
It's got to be more than that.
More than 1,000. So let's bump that up. Let's just say well over 1,000 people. What makes a good interview?
I think somebody who is, first and foremost, they have to be interested in doing the interview. They don't want to take part in it. You're never going to get anywhere. And I've interviewed some people that, like, it's kind of like pulling teeth. And when I'm in that situation, it's just like, let's just shut it down. Both of us are wasting our time. So somebody that's engaged and enjoying the process and enjoying the conversation, I think is a requirement. That's absolutely necessary. And then after that, I always say that the best interviews aren't interviews, they're conversations. And probably one of the guys that is the absolute best at that is Jordan Burroughs, where you forget that you're talking to a five-time world and Olympic champion, and it just, the conversation just starts and it starts to flow. And I always go into interviews with Jordan Burroughs thinking, like, I want to get to these like couple questions. I don't need 15 questions, but if I get to a couple topics, he's going to lead me in so many interesting directions in terms of follow-ups that you'll look up and 40 minutes have passed. And so really appreciate Jordan and some of the candor he has and the insight. He always looks at things from a little bit different perspective too, from like a historical sense. And I think that's really cool as well. But I think the other thing that makes for an interesting interview is somebody that can just kind of break that tension, kind of put you at ease. And that kind of goes back to where it just becomes a conversation rather than an interview.
So with journalism, the idea is to give a fair shake. So you were the beat writer for the University of Iowa for what?
12 years in Iowa City. Yeah. So, and then another 5 in Des Moines.
How do you balance that where you naturally like Tom Brands, you like Doug Schwab, you like everyone, but you have to write a fair story? How do you balance that emotionally, knowing that Tom Brands is probably a friend of yours, but you're going to have to write something fair about the product on the mat? How do you balance those emotions? Because we all like to be liked. How do you balance that professionally and personally?
It's difficult sometimes. It always comes back to serving the reader, serving my audience, serving my employer, I think, first and foremost, and also being fair. That, I should say, is primary, is being fair and accurate. If you're fair and accurate, I don't think that there's really any way that you can go wrong. That, to me, is like the big thing. You know, if you're fair and accurate, then no matter what you write, I think they can come back to you. And if you write something that's critical, you show your face the next time. You don't come in and take you blindside somebody and then don't show up ever again. I think we're in that world a little bit from you see all these bloggers that are taking pot shots at athletes and coaches, and then they're never showing up in the locker room and showing their face. That's something where I've always kind of been like, you know what, if I've kind of laid down the sort of ground rules with the people I cover in the beginning and have said, hey, I want to strive to be fair and accurate. And if I'm not, call me out on it. So
who are the people that are content gold that, you know, going in that you're going to get something good out of this person? I would think Tom Brands would be on that list because he's always given his take on a variety of topics, and he can take you down a path, and he's just an entertaining interview, at least from press conferences. And you've probably had one-on-one interviews with him, and we'll exclude Mark Perry because we're already giving him the content gold tab, but
Burroughs too.
Burroughs. Yeah. So we got 3 there, Tom Brands.
All he
Burroughs.
Sees is gold.
Yeah. All he sees is gold. Who are your other content gold? And maybe I'll just tee this up by saying, I can remember you saying that when you interviewed Jay Robinson, you don't really have to write the story. He writes it for you.
Yeah. It's always been one in my head.
A quote that I've always used because it's true. He kind of says what you need to say, and then you just filter out the story. So I'm assuming Jay would be on there, and maybe you can elaborate on Jay, but others that just, you know, going in, this person's going to give me something special.
Yeah. You mentioned Tom, certainly Burroughs, Perry. One of my favorites in the early years was Adam Tirapelli, and I probably would have never gotten to know Adam on a personal level had it not been for the NCAA championships being in Iowa City in 2001 and Adam being a national title contender. He ended up winning a title that year in Iowa City. And we did a lot of features on wrestlers from other schools, and Adam was one of them. And I remember I interviewed him for like 20 minutes. We ended up talking for about 45 minutes after the interview was over. And I'm like, man, this guy's his mind. I love the way that it works in a wrestling sense. And that has continued to be the case 20 years later. I mean, I was out in Fresno this year for women's freestyle world team camp and end up having lunch with him and great conversation there. And so he's one that I've thought about. Tommy Rollins, always enjoyed Tommy Rollins from conversations that usually were after battles with him and Steve Mocco. And we got to know each other after that and always appreciated conversations with him. Schwab was terrific. Oh man.
I would have never guessed Tommy Rollins, by the way. You're right about that because I feel the same way, but I would have never guessed that you would have built that he would have been the content gold. I can see why, but I didn't know that you had had that relationship with him in that way.
I'm trying to think of some others through the years. There have been a bunch.
Any women that come to mind?
Yeah, Sarah Hildebrandt. We just had a 7 minutes with her last week, and she has this really infectious personality, this upbeat personality where I mentioned that you have to know that the person you're interviewing wants to take part in it, and she always seems like she is really enjoying the process. And so I always enjoy my conversations with her. She's one that comes to mind right away. You know, you talk about people that you enjoy covering and content gold. I think the Steiner brothers are like that too. I think I really enjoy my time around those guys, and they, Terry in particular, some of the stuff that he has to say about the women's team and some of the things going on nationally or around the world in women's wrestling are really fascinating. So I've always enjoyed that. Ironside.
Yeah.
Ironside. We did a 27-minute video interview with him at the state wrestling tournament last year, and we talked about a lot of different topics. We need to get him on this show
we
at
do.
Some point.
I'm surprised we haven't yet. He is content gold. He gives you a lot, and I think it's – part of it is because he can just be open with things. He's not a coach. He doesn't have anything that
sure.
he's holding back. So I think that's part of it.
Who's content gold for you, Kyle?
John Smith, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's right up in there. We'll find out with Kevin Jackson. I've always enjoyed Kevin Jackson's content. He's always willing to give you
yep.
great information. So I'm really excited about having him on the program. I don't know if I would say content gold, but the guy that's made us think – Jacob Casper is gold sure. right now. Yeah, he's content gold. I mean, he's taking us in a different direction, asking great questions. So I've really enjoyed the Casper's Corner. And Chris Ayers was fantastic. I listened to his interview twice, and I don't typically do that. But, man, I just liked what he said, and I think he's on the horizon. But everyone
we've had content gold one week after another.
And that leads into how we've gotten to this point with the podcast, and I love how – we've had this new format for those who have listened for a long time or just tuning in. We had this show actually on a radio station. It was called 1650 The Fan locally out of Cedar Falls, Iowa.
And then I took it down with the one week that I hosted the show. You were at jury duty, and it was the last time we ever had the show.
I love that part of it, though, that I'm at jury duty and you called me, and then all of a sudden it just got in my head. It's like, hey, let's just scrap this. We had a situation where I felt like they were going to bump us. And I just had always thought this in my mind that I wanted to do more of a podcast format because I got frustrated a little bit because we would do two segments. You'd do an 18-minute with a guest and then another 15 with a guest, and then you'd have an 18-minute open. And you never felt like you really got to that point where you could get in-depth with these guys. And so when you said we had 53 minutes with John Smith last week, we had no latitude to do any of that because the whole show was 53 minutes with commercials. So it's a new format. I love that we talked it through while I was at jury duty at a murder trial and trying to talk through all that we made the decision to go to this route for our new format with the podcast. And it's been great. And I just feel like it continues to get better. We have new concepts, new themes, the Casper's Corner, the mailbag. People are more engaged. So, man, we appreciate people that give us feedback and listen. There are a couple people in Stillwater that said they listened to the show, and that just means a lot to us that we get that opportunity to have great guests and share this content with the world. It's been a blast.
Yeah, it has. Week after week, it's one of my favorite parts of my weekly routine.
I look forward to it all the time. We'll end with this with you. 43 years, do you have any regrets?
Oh, boy. I'm sure there are some. I wish I knew 20 years ago what I know now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose that could be the same for everybody, but boy, that's a tough question, Kyle.
It is, but it's your question, and you have to get to that point. I think you clearly the only reason you know, if you look back and say that 20 years ago I wish I knew, you must have made progress during that point or else you'd be the same person. So that says something that you've gotten to this point.
Well, I think that one thing that wrestling has done for me is it's put me around some like hyper-charged, motivated individuals that have brought out something in me that I wish I knew existed when I was 16, 17, 18 years old. And maybe it did, but I also didn't quite grasp like full commitment then. And I think that that would have been pretty powerful for me at the end of my high school days and into my first few years of college. I think that that would have been really influential for me, but certainly that the route that I wound up taking put me on a path where I've met an unbelievable amount of incredible people, super motivated people, disciplined people that have influenced my life in such a positive manner. I don't regret anything about the way that it's turned out.
And my favorite part of this is that you went into your career saying, I want to be the Iowa football beat writer. That was your goal. That was your end game. And then you found out you liked wrestling more.
It's crazy how it worked out. Yeah. I mean, I wanted to be the Iowa football beat writer by the time I was 30 years old. That was a goal I had when I was 18 and decided this is the route I wanted to take and got that job at 26. And I was like, well, now what?
Yeah.
And by then, even I had 3 or 4 seasons of covering wrestling under my belt and always connected better with everybody inside that Iowa wrestling room. The fourth string 157 pounder, I felt like I had a better personal relationship with that guy as opposed to the best player on the entire football roster because of just the access that we had to the program. And I'll forever be grateful to Jim Zaleski and Gable and Tom Brands for the amount of access that they gave me to the program. And that got me hooked on covering wrestling in the beginning. And I had, I would say, a decent amount of wrestling knowledge coming in, and they never talked down to me about the stuff that I didn't know. And I think that's one of the things that they really appreciated too, was the fact that I always didn't try to fake it. I always said, hey, I don't understand this. Can you explain it for me? They were always super helpful in explaining stuff and fueled the fire that I had for covering this sport. And so,
could you ever imagine a life now without wrestling?
No.
Yeah.
No, I would hope always be connected to the sport in some way, shape, or form. And I love what I'm doing now. I think that this is a perfect job for what I'm passionate about. And there's a million stories out there to be told. There's no shortage of storylines to pursue. And man, it's just been a lot of fun.
Let's get to someone that you've interviewed quite often. We know he's passionate about the sport. Let's talk with Kevin Jackson. Let's go out to Colorado Springs, Colorado, where we have a 1992 Olympic champion. But you know what? He won 2 world championships. He won one in 1991, won one in 1995, 4-time All-American. Now he's the head developmental coach for USA Wrestling. It's Kevin Jackson. How are you, Kevin?
I'm good, Kyle. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, man. And you were just telling us it's a 55-degree day out there. That has to feel good. You've been in Iowa before, and you know what this weather's like.
Yeah, I think the best investment I ever made in Iowa was buying a snowblower. So I haven't had much use of snowblower since I got out here, so pretty happy about that.
When we were at the World Championships in Budapest, you said, man, it feels good when you're one of the first world champions because you can walk around, have your gold medal, you're done. You were one of those guys, I think in 91, you won it right away and you were able to feel good. It's got to feel good walking around knowing that you got that gold medal and everyone gets to see it for a while.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, just a great experience. You know, I share that story with, you know, pretty much at every world championships, whether it's developmental age or senior level age. I tell them, you know, if you guys wrestle in that first group and you're able to win that world championship, there's no better feeling than to watch other guys try to accomplish what you've accomplished on that same weekend. And it's just a great feeling to walk around as a champ at the world championships during that current year. So yeah, I remember that fondly and good memories.
Which one was the hardest one to get of those three world Olympic championships?
Well, you know, I mean, they all were really, I mean, they none of them was easy. I mean, you've seen all of my final scores. I'm wrestling against a world champion every single final. I wrestled against a world champion in 1995. I wrestled 3 world champions on the way to the title in the quarters, semis, and the finals. So, you know, winning a world championship is never easy. I think getting that third title probably was the toughest because a little bit later in age. And, you know, obviously you're well scouted. You've been around for a while. And I didn't win in 93 and 94. So really chasing down that that third title probably was the toughest. And really, in my mind, I probably should have won five. But at the same time, I'm happy with the three and thankful that I was able to accomplish that.
What's the difference in levels between college and international wrestling?
It's huge. I mean, it's almost going from high school to college. You know, unless you're special, like a guy like Spencer Lee that comes in and is able to win right away. I mean, he's really good, and he stepped right in from high school and won a national championship. But you see that doesn't happen too often. But the gap is wide, and even a guy like Kale Sanderson, people automatically assume that he's got four NCAA titles, undefeated. He's going to walk right into being a world champion and Olympic champion. And I personally seen the work and improvement and everything that he had to do to close that gap. It's unbelievable how wide that gap is between winning the NCAA championship and a world title. But actually wrestling at the NCAA championships and feeling that level of competition actually aids you in trying to accomplish that goal. But most of our guys, they have a lot of areas to improve in, or not a lot, but they have a few specific areas that they need to improve in to give themselves even a chance to win medals. So it is huge. It's big, but our guys are able to close it in a timely fashion in order to give us the medals that we've gotten.
You graduated from Iowa State in 1987. Then you made your world team in 91. You won it that year. So in that 4 years, what did you have to do to get to that level and to improve? Because Randy Lewis always said, hey, you figured out freestyle. You got to that level by just repetition, hard work. What did you have to do to get there?
Well, you know, I never lost confidence myself throughout my course of my college career. I don't think very many people would have picked me to win a gold medal. In 92, actually not winning an NCAA championship while I was in college. Actually, I had to close the gap on a couple guys, learn how to hand fight guys like Royce Algiers, and figure that puzzle out before I could take that next step to becoming a world champion. But just through repetition, just through going to international competitions, and here's what we had and what we're looking at now with our world and Olympic team is I had guys like Kenny Monday, Dave Schultz, Chris Campbell, Nate Carr, that were in front of me, years in front of me, that I could look at, learn from, train with, and realize Dave Schultz, guys, I could realize that I'm wrestling against the best guys in the world. I'm competing against the best guys in the world. I'm training just as hard, if not harder, and I'm being tested at a world level. That's what allowed me to close that gap and to make the jump that I needed to make, because the will and the confidence and a lot of the skill was already there. But having those guys to sharpen my skills and sharpen my competitive edge was vital in my overall development. And I think you're seeing a lot of that now.
Tom and Terry Brands were on every world team that you were on. Did you build a good relationship with those guys when you were on world teams together?
Yeah, it was I think we were a team as far as how we approached everything, and when we won as a team, we celebrated as a team. But you know, at that level, you're individuals too, and you're always focused on yourself and doing what you need in order to accomplish your goal. And so I have a great relationship with Terry and Tom. It didn't look like that when I was sitting across the mat from them and even in the same room with them sometime or those things. But at the same time, we all knew that each and every one of us was going after a world championship, and the odds were that we were going to get one of those titles. And I was kind of in the mindset that if Terry and Tom is winning, I'm winning. And it was the same mindset I had when John Smith and Bruce, you know, when I first hit the circuit, I look at our squad and I know Bruce is going to win. John's going to win. Kenny's going to win. These other guys are going to be in the hunt. I got to win. And so I think we fed off each other in that way. It was great to win the world championship individually and as a team with Terry. Me and Terry won the world championship together. In 1995, when we finally captured our second world championship, you know, I watched Tom and Terry in 93 go to war, absolute war. Conditions were perfect for them in Toronto, Canada, you know, no air conditioning, hot, muggy. You got all your matches out of the way in one day, except for the final. And so it was a battle of nutrition. It was a perfect scenario for them. And they went to war. Every single match, was fun to watch. And so those guys being on the team motivated me to even push even harder to accomplish that goal, because I knew I didn't want to be a guy that watch other guys crown as world champions and not be one of them as well. So I tried to lead by example. That they're, I'm a little bit older than those guys, and I think they bought into what we were trying to accomplish as a team. But we had a lot of special guys in those teams back in the day.
What did Dave Schultz do for that era?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now that Dave Schultz, we lost. I mean, I don't think the country, we're just now kind of recovering from that, but I don't think we even realized what we lost when we lost Dave Schultz. We lost a master of the sport. We lost a technician, a tactician, one of the best tacticians in the whole world. Just his mind and his ability to develop technique. He's one of the few guys that him and Jerry Donoff and, you know, Melvin Douglas, but I've only known two or three guys that I can say, hey, man, I'm struggling in this area. I'm having a problem with this skill. I'm having a problem in this area. And they could go home at night and come back the next day with some new technique that actually works. And I don't know too many of those kind of guys. I'm not necessarily one of those guys that kind of, you know, I kind of pick and choose from a lot of different athletes from around the world, a lot of different champions. But Dave Schultz and a couple other guys, they could break it down to the base level area that you definitely could use and need. But just the guy learned Russian just so he could communicate with the best Russians in the world, so we could get better as a country, so he could get better. But I couldn't even tell you what we lost when we lost Dave, because we lost a ton, and I think you've seen it, you saw it, in years after that with, you know, the decline a little bit. But I think that has to do more with the athletes we're getting in as opposed to, you know, the technical skill. But at the same time, I mean, I could not even, you know, begin to tell you how much we lost as a country when we lost Dave.
Would we have won world championships in 93 and 95 without John DuPont and Team Foxcatcher?
Yeah, that's a tough one, man. I mean, you know, John DuPont, you know, I always tell people that, you know, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. It was the best of times when he first hit the circuit, the money came in. We had a true national team that was receiving a stipend. You know, I received a stipend from USA Wrestling. I received a stipend from John DuPont. I didn't have to worry about working or coaching or any of those things. We could just focus on wrestling and getting better and traveling and training. And so he allowed USA Wrestling to evolve to what it is now. And I can't say yes or no, because we still have the athletes, but obviously he aided in our success without a doubt. The funding that he put into the sport allowed us to take that next step as an organization and as athletes who became professionals, and we pursued world titles like Iran, Russia, Turkey, the way the rest of the professional wrestlers in the world were pursuing titles. So, like I said, the best times, the worst of times, but John DuPont did, with his funding, allow USA Wrestling to take that next step towards accomplishing the things that we accomplished. But we were, I mean, when you look at it, we were real close before that, too. I mean, we weren't too far off of Russia before John DuPont. But as his funding came in and we became more professional, we took over the world.
We connect you with Iowa State because you wrestled there your senior year, but you went to Louisiana State for your first 3 years. Do you feel a connection to LSU?
I do. You know, I still support the purple. You know, the purple and gold. I still support those colors. Obviously, you know, very disappointed when the program has dropped. And very few people know I went to Louisiana State. Very few people know I spent the majority of my career wrestling as a true freshman. Wrestled 3 years at Louisiana State, and then because I didn't have a red shirt, was able to transfer, take that red shirt, and have 2 years at Iowa State, and then continue to train there during my Olympic and World Championship days. But yeah, I'll still root for Louisiana State. I was a little disappointed with the way that whole thing rolled out, but it happened so fast. It happened during the summer when I was working Jay Robinson's camp at UNI, and Coach Briggs came up to me and said, how do you like that purple color? And I knew he was talking about Louisiana State. I said, I love that purple color. And he's like, how'd you like to come to UNI? Because Louisiana State just dropped the program. couldn't believe it. Ran to the phone, talked to my coach, and he confirmed that Louisiana State had been dropped. So I never returned. I never went back until my daughter signed with the University of New Orleans to play volleyball this past year. I went back for the first time to Louisiana's campus when she went on her official visit. So I still connect to them. A little disappointed with us dropping the program. We were ranked fourth in the country at the time. After the regular season, we didn't accomplish winning the trophy my senior year, but we were a pretty good team. We sent 10 guys from Louisiana State to other schools, and they all became All-Americans.
Wow. Yeah, Kevin, I'm glad Kyle asked that. He kind of read my mind because I was thinking about that too. You know, looking down your resume, and I know that that's something I've never asked you about, is that chapter of your career. How did you wind up there in the first place?
Well, you know, these times and days, kids are looking for, you know, the proper degrees and, you know, the best fit. I was just looking for warm weather. I was looking to get out of Michigan, and I was looking at Arizona State and Louisiana State. So I went down to Louisiana State, and they had several guys from Michigan on their team. I connected to several of the wrestlers on their team. Just had a great time on a recruiting visit. Just made those connections with coaches and athletes, and felt like it was the best place for me. You know, a team that is upcoming and growing, and actually had a schedule like Iowa State has. You know, we wrestled Iowa State in a duel. We wrestled Iowa. We wrestled Midlands. We wrestled all the tough teams in the country. And I just felt like that was home, and it was a great fit for me, and really enjoyed my three years at Louisiana State.
What was the wrestling culture like in Louisiana then?
Well, it was about wrestling. You know, they were WWF fans. You know, it was, I'd go over to my friend's house. You know, basketball players would invite me over, you know, their homes, and their dads would think that I'm, you know, bouncing off of the turnbuckle and jumping off the rope. So they were more into the wrestling than they were in wrestling. So the culture with the team was pretty strong. I mean, Dan Learshack Taylor did a good job recruiting. He did a great job getting all Americans and guys to the NCAA tournament and winning the Western Regional on a consistent basis. So for us, it was strong as a group, but, you know, very few people showed up for our dual meets. You know, it was, they were about the football, you know, they're about the football, and that's pretty much what they lived for. So it wasn't as exciting competing in front of a small group of fans, but as far as the support, financially, travel, everything else, that was very strong, and it allowed me to capture, you know, some All-American honors when I was with them.
You are the developmental coach at USA Wrestling, and one of the athletes that has benefited from you and the program is Jaden Cox. He won a world championship after an Olympic bronze, world bronze, moved up a weight class because he had the opportunity to be there with a new weight class. What kind of jumps did Jaden make to get to that level and win a world gold?
Well, you know, Jaden was special. I mean, if we had more time and I had to tell you how special Jaden is, I mean, it take up more time than we have. The things that he was able to accomplish based on the training that he was under, winning a bronze medal in Brazil and then a bronze medal in Paris, I mean, he's special. So the ability, the skill, the will, everything was already there. But I think the understanding of what it takes to be a world champion is what I tried to instill in Jaden. And it really comes down to some basic fundamental tactics, some basic fundamental skills that we really had to refine for him to accomplish his goal. So I think that's probably where he made the biggest gains from us. And you'd be surprised, you know, when I talk about fundamental skills, that's where we're flawed at when you talk about going from college to the senior level. You know, I watch college wrestling every weekend probably, and I watch senior level wrestling. I watch, you know, some high school wrestling. I got high school kids in this program, and there's some basic fundamental skills that we're flawed at coming from a hand fighting to a basic sprawl. You know, I watched DeSantos beat the kid from Rutgers in a match where it was a kid from Michigan. Meeches beat the kids from Rutgers in a match, and it was one takedown that determined the match. And he gets to, what's the kid I'm talking about from Rutgers?
Suriano.
Seriano. He gets to Seriano's a leg. And Seriano's in a position where all he has to do is sprawl, square his hips, turn his hips over the head, look to square his hips, and look to counter that action. Never sprawled, never squared his hips. And he's one of the best wrestlers we have. And so as I get kids from college to senior level or to the elite level, those basic skills are the things that's going to allow them to make that jump from age group or college to that senior level. So with Jaden, it was the same thing. You know, head and hands defense, controlling tights, controlling pace, understanding tactically that we're going to make this guy work going into the second period or going into the break, that we're looking to score going into the break. So from a masterful tactical, world-class tactical approach, we presented that to Jaden. He connected to it. From a baseline skill, must win, must do position situations, we connected those things to Jaden. He was able to realize it, see it, and that just raised his confidence to another level. I just think he went out to win a world title, which he did. I think this year he's going to force Axe a little bit more and maybe get a few more points on the board to really showcase how special he really is.
Kevin, when you look forward to 2020 with him, he's going to have to make a decision, 86 or 97. Which way do you anticipate him going?
Well, you know, he came out here for a couple reasons. He really, truly believed that 86 is his weight class. And, you know, I'm caught in between it a little bit because I'm on the national coaching staff, and I have a great relationship with David Taylor, as I do all the rest of the guys. And our goal as a staff is to get Olympic gold medalists. And for us, obviously I'm Jaden's coach, but for us, gold medal is a gold medal, no matter who wins it. But obviously I'm Jaden's everyday coach, so I'm training him to be the very best he possibly can. So Jaden's going to move down to 86. Because he believes that's his weight class. He's medaled there twice, hasn't captured the gold medal there. He came out to Colorado Springs not only for the training in the wrestling room, but for what we can offer nutrition-wise, what we can offer from a sports psychology standpoint. From all the resources that we have available on campus, that's why he came here. And so the nutrition side is one of the things that he's already connected to. Jaden's probably weighing about 205 every single day. And that's lighter than he weighed days before Brazil, days before Paris. So it shows you the commitment that he's made to his nutrition plan and what he feels and what he thinks he needs to do to accomplish his goal. He, you look at his body, it's totally different than what it was 3 years ago, and he's continuing to develop from a strength and conditioning program. So he'll go 86. I think we'll get a gold medal out of that weight class for sure. So that probably answers a lot of questions. I don't know. There doesn't need to be any mystery out there, but I do think he could fluctuate at either weight class and be pretty competitive.
I asked you this before Jaden was a world championship, and now I'm going to ask you now that he's a world champion. Prime against prime, world champ Melvin Douglas against world champ Jaden Cox.
Oh, that's a match, man. That's a match. That's a match in their prime.
Yeah, prime against prime.
That's a match.
Who wins that?
That's a match. You know, Melvin was the tacticians of tacticians. I mean, Melvin's mind was so great as far as how he approached the sport and how he prepared. And people, you know, they remember us. Most people remember me and Melvin and a lot of us towards the end of our career where we had it figured out. And we knew exactly that we could stop this guy from scoring. We're going to figure out a way to win the match. And so our scores became lower, maybe not as entertaining. But in Melvin's prime, he was an action-packed, go-getter, attack you, duck one side, come back the other side, counter offense, masterful defense, masterful parterre offense, unbelievable. So right now, Jaden hadn't hit his prime yet. Jaden hadn't hit his prime. If they wrestle right now, and I'm sorry, Jaden, you're my boy, but I got to lean towards my man Melvin because Melvin's got 4 world medals. Jaden's got 3. They both have world titles. So Jaden's 23 years old, and he hasn't hit his prime yet. And so when that hits, I'll probably lean a little bit towards Jaden. But it's hard to go against my man Melvin. Melvin was the toughest American I've ever wrestled. He was the guy I feared the most. So when Royce Alger's made it to the Olympic trials, I was like, thank you. Melvin didn't make it. So I had to wrestle him instead of Royce, or had to wrestle Royce instead of Melvin. And I was so grateful because Melvin was left leg lead, hard to score, and hard defense, offense off the charts, and this was a truly big challenge for me. And so toughest American I've ever wrestled.
Your goal now as developmental coach is to get these guys to their athletic prime, I guess, as quickly as possible. Tell us about the Elite Athlete Accelerator Program. This is a special program. You're part of it. Tell us what you want to accomplish about the EAP program.
Well, it's all in the name. It's about the elite age group athlete. It's about the elite high school athlete. We do have gray shirts that we open our doors to as well, but it's about that elite athlete that wants to be great, that wants to push ahead of, that wants to get ahead of schedule, that wants to get ahead of schedule on the road to being a world and Olympic champion, that can develop the world-class skills, that once they get to a world championship, that they're in a position of understanding to know what they need to do to win. It's the Kyle Snyder, Henry Cejudo model, but it's 2.0 now, because we have several more resources in place. USOC has funded rooms and room and board and travel budget for us to take our guys overseas and to take them to training camps and to get them to wrestle with national team members at national camps all over the country, and as well as all over the world. It's for a kid that's trying to accelerate his career, but realistically he has to be capable. He has to be nationally ranked, he has to be in the hunt of making a world team age group wise. And he has to have the skills and the mindset, and he has to be, you know, Kyle Snyder was the perfect model because he was a mature young man that took care of business. And so what we try to do out here, what Coach Zadik emphasizes, is let's teach these guys how to become professionals right now at an early stage in their career. So as we continue to move forward, that they can understand completely what it looks like, what it feels like, what it means to be a professional athlete and to carry yourself as so as you develop the skills on and off the mat, the nutritional understanding, the psychological understanding that's going to allow you to be the best in the world.
Andy was the first person to show me video of Aaron Brooks, and I was blown away when he showed me the video of what he was able to accomplish, a perfect blend of activity and intensity. You've been working with him. What's his upside when we look down 5 years down the road and what he can accomplish?
Oh, this kid's off the charts. I mean, this kid is he's perfect. He's a perfect example of what we're looking for. You know, they made a decision, him and his father made a decision when he was a junior that they were going to spend the year after high school in our program. And so Aaron spent the most time with me since I've been back as any other athlete has. And first of all, he already comes with the toughness, the skill, the athleticism, the technical skill to compete with anyone in the country. And in the world, as he showed as a cadet. You know, funny story about Aaron is I knew where his head was at and how confident he was in his abilities and what he really thought of himself and believed in himself, because he was an alternate at the Cadet World Championship behind Travis Whitlake, who I believe had a chance to win a world title that year as well. But Aaron Brooks comes as an alternate, doesn't come to camp, comes to the World Championship because it was a late call. He brings his own American flag with him. That's how much he believed he was going to win. Because he brought his own flag. I'm like, if a guy brings his own flag, and I said it to Lee Pritz at the time, if a young man brings his own flag to the World Championships, oh, he's winning. And so it was destiny that he ended up capturing that World Championship in unbelievable fashion, dominated the World Championship. And he did so at the Junior World as well. We just didn't connect to the tactical and technical areas that he knows he should have. And I think he's gained and got better from that. But Aaron Brooks is exactly what we're looking at when we're talking about athletes that are tailor-made for a program like the Accelerated program. I do think it's going to aid him at Penn State, capturing national championships there and helping that team. But again, I think it's what Bill and Brandon Slay and the guys before me kind of put in place before I got there was let's teach these guys how to become professional athletes. Let's teach these guys about sleep, nutrition, how you behave, how Jordan Boros behaves, how Kyle Snyder behaves, how Cox and David Taylor behaved as men. Let's teach him those things, and the wrestling part's going to take care of itself. So Aaron's a perfect example of what the EAP program is all about. And when you look at what he did when he was in high school, beating college athletes, not just beating them, but pinning them, tacking them, and dominating them, kid's good. I mean, the kid's good. And we're lucky to have guys like Taylor and Dake and Jaden in front of him. Otherwise, he'd probably be on our world team.
Wow. Kevin, when you look at this program, how far in advance are you lining up young athletes to join, like maybe for next year? Do you have anybody lined up yet for next year?
Yeah, we do. I mean, obviously the parents have to go ahead and pull the trigger and make that final decision. But obviously, I first look at our world medalists at age group level, cadet and juniors. And then we start moving on to national rank kids. And then we start looking at state champions and potential athletes can actually win. You know, we got guys like Josh Saunders possibly coming into the program. You got Greg Kirkfleet coming in the program. I got some other kids. I got Julian Tagg expected to stay in the program. We have several guys that we're continue to communicate with. I only have 7 beds on campus, so really it's a numbers game. It's hard to throw a huge net out there because I don't want to turn any great kids away. But first of all, we try to get the very best cadets, the best juniors into the program. Then we start looking at gray shirts that have already proven themselves to be world-level contenders. And then we also have a few spots off campus that are kind of for some of the Air Force kids that they bring in, and then some of the local kids that shown some ability. So they have, they have free access to the training center and all the resources available if you're off campus as well. So I start talking to kids 2-3 years out, start tightening it down a year prior to them coming out here, and then kind of picking and choosing what the best options are based on space availability.
We've spent a lot of time talking about the program itself and some of the guys within it. How about for yourself? What has it done for you? What has this role been like for you?
It's been cool. I mean, it's a lot less stress, obviously. A lot less stress in the life coming out to Colorado Springs and dealing with, just some unbelievable young men and being at USA Wrestling and ending with the senior level guys doing what they're doing. And it's kind of rejuvenated me in a little bit of a wrestling way. But obviously I love Colorado Springs. I was out here, coaching for 9-10 years, prior to going to Iowa State. So being back and having, being welcomed with open arms by Rich Bender and USA Wrestling and Bill and Joe, working with those guys. It's fun to work with guys you love, work with guys that you really care about. And so I'm not saying that wasn't the case anywhere else I've been, but obviously being back at USA Wrestling has been refreshing and been enjoyable.
Is there anything you miss about college wrestling?
No, nothing. Nothing at all.
With the, you talked about 7. Go ahead.
I miss you. I miss you and Kyle.
Thank you. We appreciate that. We're all wrestling.
No, it was hard, man. It's a grind. It's a grind. I really think that, I learned a lot while I was at Iowa State. I think I learned it probably a little bit too late from a recruiting standpoint. I think we started putting some things in place that was going to allow us to take that next step with the recruiting classes that we had over the last couple of days. But obviously that last year really, really hammered us and didn't allow me to see that coming to fruition. But at the same time, it's a grind, man. I give credit to those college coaches. It's never ending. It's all about recruiting. There's a reason Cale Sanderson and Penn State is the best in the country, and it's not a secret. Ohio State's close behind, and Iowa's right there too, and some of the other programs. But it all comes down to recruiting, and it took me a while to figure that part out. But it comes down to getting the very best guys. Because if I get the best guys, and you get the second best guys, my best guys are probably going to beat them. So we all come from that American coaching-based system. So it's not anybody showing anything more so than anybody else or creating a different mentality than anybody else besides, maybe the love, the passion, the joy of actually competing might be a little bit different from one program to the other. But at the same time, there's no secrets to who's the best and why they're the best.
Do you want to get those beds up in numbers? I think you said you had 7 beds available. Do you want to get that to 30, 50?
I do. I made a request for 12 to 15 beds this last year. Obviously, it's a funding thing. The USOC has funded every part of the program. It's a $32,000 a year to house and feed an athlete for a year. So it's a huge expense. As you add beds on, that expense goes up. So it's a challenge to get more funding to get extra beds, but I really would like it. At the same time, I talked to several coaches and athletes that enjoy it being a small number. Now we'll have 15 to 20 in the room on a daily basis when school's not in, when college isn't going on, because we have Air Force kids and we have our local kids that come to our room. We have kids that come in on training specials, those type of things. But I think my athletes like the individual attention that they receive on a daily basis with having small numbers.
Kevin, I miss Willie Gadsden, man. He passed away a few years ago. Kyvan's still wrestling. Do you think about Willie quite a bit?
Yeah, he's my man. You know, Willie was my man. Willie was one of my biggest supporters, one of my most loyal guys. He gave me Kyvan. I talked to Kyvan quite a bit. You know, I'm talking to Nate Carr, who was in control of Kyvan's training at this time, and apologize for the cars going by. But yeah, man, Willie, I mean, how many people do you run into that say they know Willie Gadsden, love Willie Gadsden? He was one of my best friends and everything else that comes along with that. So yeah, man, I miss Willie, love Willie. Still talk to his wife, and his other son, quite often, but obviously we lost a lot when we lost Willie too. When Iowa State lost a lot when they lost Willie.
How important is it for inner city kids to have African American influences and see them be successful, see them on the high bar, to make sure that they're set up for the rest of their lives?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Well, how important is it to have African American influences like a Willie, like you, like Lee Kemp, so they can identify with that, so they can see I can be successful just like they have been?
Well, I think we all need people that we can identify with. I think we all need people that we can look to that look like us. I think I read an article the other day that Jordan Burroughs wrote about people he had to look to because he was one of the few people, minorities in his area at his school that wrestled. And he's seen me and Kenny Mundy, and we gave him hope that he could wrestle, that he could do real well, that he could become an Olympic champion. And so, you know, I think that says it in a nutshell, that, you know, it's important that you see people that look like you, that have been where you're at. And it doesn't always have to be look like you. It doesn't have to be a black or white thing. It's just a matter of maybe a person came from the same thing you came from, or came up in poverty, didn't have wrestling shoes growing up, didn't have, you know, some of the things that some of the other people have to reach the goal and make it easier. But because they did it and you're aware of that, it allows you to believe that you can do it. And I think that's what we're able to do I think that's what happens when you see someone that looks like you and when you have minorities in the sport and people doing great things.
Did you have that growing up? Did you have someone you looked to in wrestling?
Well, you know, I not to this degree, but I watched ESPN one time. I watched ESPN one time, and the national championship was going on. The wrestling national championship was going on, and I watched Nate Carr win the national championship. And we were at the same weight. He was wrestling 150 at the time, and I was 155 my senior year. I just seen how he's huge. I mean, there's no way he's 150 pounds. But I watched him win. I think it was against Rosino in the NCAA championship, and that motivated me. And that showed me that I could get to where he's at. And same thing with Lee Kemp. You know, I would hear about Lee Kemp. I'd hear about Lee Kemp, and I never watched him wrestle until I went to the World Cup my senior year, and didn't know he was a tactician, and I thought he was going to be throwing guys off the mat to play them, because that's how I wrestle, kind of upper body and lower body stuff. And somebody said, Kevin, you're not going to see that from Lee Kemp. You're going to see him defend everything, but you're going to see him get to a leg, finish, and that's going to be the match. And that's exactly what happened. And so I did have athletes that looked like me that I was able to look to and emulate, that allowed me to believe that I could accomplish great things as well.
Did you have a solid upbringing? What was your youth like, Kevin?
I did. My mother and father were in the home the whole time I was a child. You know, they supported everything that we did. You know, we were big into, I was big into football, man. I was a football guy. So I actually loved football more than wrestling. And so I played football in college. But at the same time, I had the support of my family. We had great wrestling tradition at my junior high and my high school. Several state championship teams, several state champs. We'd have our high school athletes come down to work with us when we were in junior high, and we had coaches and parents that took me and I credit most of my success to parents and grassroots coaches that took me all around the country to wrestle every single weekend. So great support from my parents, great support from my high school, my junior high. You know, so I had everything I needed. Chances to wrestle in not Fargo, but Iowa City for the junior nationals, and you know, just all kinds of opportunities to compete and challenge myself and wrestle with great guys. And Michigan was a strong wrestling state during that time as well.
All right, Andy Hamilton turns 43 today. What's your best memory of Andy?
Andy Hamilton? My best memory of Andy. Let me think. I mean, I got so many memories of Andy, but my best memory of Andy is, you know, covering Kevin Jackson at Iowa State was a tough job. It was a tough job. But Andy always treated me with respect, always was there to ask the right questions, and you know, and I'm not saying we're best friends or anything like that, but I felt like, you know, not that he supported Iowa State or anything like that, but I just thought he was a fair guy. And I look at him as a friend right now, because I think he's a great reporter. I think he does a great job. I think he loves wrestling, cares about it deeply, and continues to. So happy birthday, my man.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate it.
Hey, we'll end with this. We got 2 years. We got a 2-year cycle. We got 2019, 2020. Give us your take on what the next 2 years looks like for the United States in freestyle wrestling.
I think we're in a great spot. I mean, you guys were at the World Championships. The Russians are not playing any games. They don't like losing at all, especially the United States. And so they've turned it up in every single way. You've seen how much it meant to them with their coach getting thrown out of the tournament. And that's when we were rolling. That's when we looked like we were gonna regain that title or go back to back. I think Dake had won. I think Taylor had made the finals, and Jaden was rolling. And you've seen them panic, man. I've seen them panic in the back of the gym. And also, I seen the coach on the mat when he lost to the Cuban. I seen him break. And so, but they ended up pulling it out. They ended up winning the championship, and they want to win it. They want to win another one, but we have the guys. We have the guys that are capable of dominating the world. And like I said earlier, it's not going to be easy. This trip that we go over to Russia, go over to Kazakhstan and wrestle, it's not going to be easy. It's not Budapest. It's not France. It's basically Russia. So it's going to be a challenge in every single way, but we do have the manpower. If we continue to put the work in, if these guys continue to listen to Coach Zadik and follow the national team's plan, which I'll tell you what, man, the team that wrestled in, I've never seen a team more prepared, more ready than they were for Budapest. There's never been a team, and you guys know how long I've been around, how many teams I've seen and coached and been around. There's never been another team in U.S. history that spent more time in training camp than our guys did. And that might be good and bad. Some guys look at it as bad. You know, they don't like to always being at the Olympic Training Center or being on the road away from their family. But at the same time, they pay the price, and they do what they need to do. They do what they need to do to accomplish their goal. So it's going to come with a challenge, But I do think we're definitely going to be in the hunt. And you guys, I think you guys know that too. I'm not going to ever guarantee a world championship because those are hard to come by. But we're going to be in the hunt because we have the right guys doing the right things. And we have a lot of them doing it. And we're going to continue to do it for a while as long as we continue to develop kids at the cadet level, at the grassroots level. Now we have our school board world championships, and we'll see how that rolls out. But we're pretty good right now, and we just got to keep doing. We just got to keep working hard to accomplish those goals.
I'll tell you what. When I think of the 2017 World Championships, when you guys won it, the one thing I remember is Kevin Jackson's celebration. Man, you were jacked.
You know, dude, it was a long time, and you know, and it was a few things, you know, going along with that. Obviously, coming off of the Iowa State gig, and you know, and then you know, having a chance to win a world championship with that junior level team, you know, there was emotions all tied all together. But at the same time, you know, I recognize how hard winning world championships are. I think I was one of the few guys that was on those teams, the '93 and '95 team, and then to be on the staff at the time that we win as a team, that's exciting. And then when I got back there, you know, I was already pumped because we were up in the stands watching Snyder do his thing and win that title. We were, me and Sammy Hinton were in the stands watching him win. We wanted to be in the crowd. We wanted to feel it. And so we were watching him. And so as soon as that match was done, we slapped hands. Come on. We slapped hands. Okay. We slapped hands and I ran downstairs. And they had already given Snyder his hugs and kisses, but I just thought the celebration was kind of mild, you know. And I'm like, let's get this thing fired up. Let's go. You know, we just won a world championship. So obviously, you know, and you know, I'm a little emotional anyway. I get a little, I'm easily excited anyway. So it was fun, man. It was exciting. I was glad to be a part of that and glad to turn that celebration up a notch.
All right, I swear this is the last thing. Kurt Angle, man, he was a guy I loved watching growing up and won a 95 world championship with you when you were on that world championship team. How tough was Kurt?
He was good, man. He was good. He was hardcore. He trained like a champion. You know, all the matches he won were tied matches, and he outworked the guy for the referee to give him the referee's decision. So, you know, and just his daily lifestyle, you know, Kurt wasn't the biggest 220-pound, 100-kilo guy in the world. So he was constantly pushing the nutrition, constantly lifting weights, waking up in the middle of the night, pushing tuna fish shakes and stuff like that. And, you know, and so, but from a talent standpoint, I mean, from a skill level standpoint, I mean, he could level change as well as any small man. He could counter, he could defend, he could scramble, he could battle. I mean, you see what he did at heavyweights with some guys that were probably 60, 70 pounds more than him on several occasions. But he was special. Kurt was special, without a doubt. All those even matches, he definitely deserved the referee's decision. He definitely deserved that call. And I was proud and excited to be on the team with Kurt because he epitomized what you have to do to earn an Olympic gold medal, to earn a world title. So, for me to win a world title with Kurt 95, I mean, that was special for me too.
Kevin, thank you for this great interview. We appreciate it. All the best with the developmental program. This is a fun program. Excited to see what comes out of it. And we're hoping you get those 15 beds.
Right on, guys. Thanks for the support, guys. Love you. And you guys take care, all right?
Thanks, Kevin. We appreciate it. That's Kevin Jackson. He is the head developmental coach for USA Wrestling. Kind of like John Smith, it went what? 50 some odd minutes.
46
Kyle. Minutes there. And I wanted to go about another hour and a half on that bad boy, but we had to let him go at some point. We did. And I'll tell you what, this EAP program, it's the cutting edge. I think a lot more people are interested in this. And I think you're seeing a trend here. And we're on the beginning stages of this. But Aaron Brooks was the guy that you showed me. And I think he's going to come out of this the better for it.
Yeah, really intrigued to see where this thing goes. I think it, when you see like the Tag brothers giving up high school seasons to go out and participate in it, it's really interesting. We haven't seen a whole lot of that before. As he mentioned, Henry Cejudo, Kyle Snyder were kind of trendsetters that set the stage for this program, and look how it turned out for them.
Turned out pretty well. Olympic champion for both those guys. And again, we've had this trend. We've talked about it. These guys are getting better earlier. And I think this is one of those programs that's showing why it can work and why you can have your best wrestling at the early end of your career. And you don't have to wait till you're 28, 29, 30. You can get it now. And Kyle Snyder and Henry Cejudo set the bar. Henry Cejudo was the youngest Olympic champion in 2008, 2016. Kyle Snyder says, I can do you one better. I can be 20 years old and win it. And who knows what the upside is here, but it's a program that clearly is working. And the more beds they can get, I think the better USA Wrestling is going to be because of it.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think so as well. And not to sidetrack a whole lot, but Kyle, like every week, seems like we wrap up our interview and we expect like, all right, like how are we going to match at the next week? And sooner or later, one of these is going to fall off and it's not going to have as much pizzazz as what maybe the previous weeks did. And every week, like our guest delivers.
Yeah, man, I agree. It's been fun to have this content and you learn so much out of it. And you think you know someone well and then something new comes up. And Kevin Jackson was certainly in that boat. We enjoyed that. Thanks for the comments we got last week on the John Smith interview. That was fun. What a great meet that was. Iowa and Oklahoma State. There's a lot more. We have conference championships coming up. If you like wrestling, make sure you tune into Track. Division II and Division III NCAA championships are on Track Wrestling Correct, and you can get into that feed. So make sure you watch that. Of course, watch the NAIAs, the Division I's, and we'll be watching all of the international scenes. So for Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com, I'm Kyle Klingman. You've been listening to On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to MattTalkOnline.com.